Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.
From KQED Public Radio, this is the California Report. Coming up, wind, rain, and a blizzard in the Sierra, the latest on the ferocious storms hammering the state. Also, global warming imperils the future of the Sacramento Delta, and fixing the problem won't be cheap.
It is all going to be expensive, but it'll be far more economical to make the investment today than to wait for the disaster to hit us.
Also, how changing weather has winemakers rethinking their operations.
The temperature is going crazy on us, and so it's changing the dynamics of where it's appropriate to have grapes or not have grapes. So we will find some places in California no longer ideal for grape growing here in the very near future.
I'm Scott Schaefer. Those stories plus putting Pakistan's political problems to music. It's the California Report. The biggest news in California today is the weather. Rain, wind, flood warnings in the lowlands, and blizzard warnings in the Sierra. At the Regional Emergency Operations Center in Los Alamitos this afternoon, Governor Schwarzenegger urged Californians to be sensible and heed any warnings to evacuate. In the Southland, where last year's wildfires left so many hillsides bare, all that rain in the forecast has state and local officials worried about mudslides.
Since there is so much land that has been burned, we are prepared for those mudslides. So we have aircrafts available. We have resources all over the state available. We have those offices available, the local offices of emergency services available, and the National Guard, the Coastal Service. Everything is really coordinated so that if there is a problem, that we are ready to act.
Our Los Angeles Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz attended the governor's briefing today, and he begins our storm coverage.
Emergency workers here in Southern California are piling sandbags, bales of hay, and dropping fluorescent green-colored soil stabilizer along steep, barren canyons that burned this past autumn. Orange County officials have issued a voluntary evacuation order for Modjeska and Silverado Canyons. These are areas where fire charred much of the vegetation, and officials are worried the rain could cause mudslides there. In Los Angeles County, swift boat rescue teams have been deployed to low-lying areas prone to flooding. A flash flood watch is in effect in much of the L.A. metro area through tomorrow evening. Forecasters predict coastal areas will receive 2 to 5 inches of rain, while mountains in the Southland could get up to 10 inches of rain by the end of the weekend. Governor Schwarzenegger and the State Office of Emergency Services have urged residents to use caution when driving this weekend and to pay attention to news reports for possible evacuation orders. Back to you, Scott.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Schmitz in Los Angeles. Well, 2008 is sure coming in like a lion, and nowhere was the roar louder Friday than in Northern California. Storms there knocked out power to more than a million people, temporarily shutting down some roads. Erica Kelly has this report from San Francisco.
In San Francisco, the wind brought down trees, power lines, even a four-story scaffolding in the Pacific Heights neighborhood. Workers scrambled to clear the scaffolding from a car that was parked on the street. Road closures snarled traffic throughout the Bay Area. In Marin County, Highway 101 was shut down for most of the day because of construction debris that blew onto the roadway from an overpass. The highway was reopened this afternoon after Caltrans crews were able to resecure the construction site. The Richmond-San Rafael Bridge has also been closed for most of the day because of high winds and a semi-truck that overturned on the bridge. Some low-lying areas in Marin County flooded this morning. Meanwhile, flash flood warnings have been in effect for Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. And the Federal Emergency Management Agency has activated response centers in Northern and Southern California to help deal with the storm's impact. For the California Report, I'm Erica Kelly in San Francisco.
And I'm Sasha Coca from the Central Valley Bureau. Fierce winds and heavy snow are pounding the Sierra. Forecasters say these storms could bring 150-mile-an-hour winds and dump 6 inches of snow an hour in some mountain areas. Roads over key passes were closed because of automobile spinouts and downed power lines. And high winds meant several ski resorts decided to shut their lifts Friday. Russ Pecoraro is with Heavenly Mountain Resort in Lake Tahoe.
What does it look like up there? It's hard to say because it's snowing so hard that you can barely see anything. But, yeah, we are getting a ton of snow right now. We're being hammered. We've got, you know, a lot of wind, and it's a real live blizzard up here.
Search and rescue crews throughout the Sierra are on high alert. They're hoping any backcountry hikers or skiers check the weather report before heading into remote mountain areas. And they remind travelers to stay with their vehicles if they get stranded in a blizzard. Once the storms have passed, they could leave 10 feet of new snow in the Sierra. That's not only good news for skiers, but for the state's farmers and water managers who are hoping for a healthy snowpack. For the California Report, I'm Sasha Coca in the Central Valley Bureau.
Those storms battering the mountains this weekend will help fill reservoirs come spring. But in the long run, scientists say global warming is going to reduce the Sierra snowpack. As the temperature rises, the winter storms we rely on for water will have less snow in them and more rain. And where does all that water go? Well, up to half the state's precipitation drains into the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. The Delta is the hub for California's complicated water supply system. And if climate change predictions come true, the loss of snowpack, warmer winter storms, rivers bulging with water in the winter, and dry summers, well, then the Delta's landscape and basic function could be drastically altered. And that would affect almost all of us. Tamara Keith explains.
We're on Sherman Island, which is one of the largest islands in the Delta. And it's sort of at the edge. It's at the confluence of the Sacramento River and the bay, where the salt water meets fresh water. This is California's water supply.
You bet. This is it. It comes down the Sacramento here, turns left as it gets out towards San Francisco Bay, and is sucked back up to the pumps and exported off to 4 million people in the Bay Area, 3 million acres of agriculture in the San Joaquin Valley, and 21 million people in Southern California.
That's UC Davis professor Jeff Mount.
Notorious Big Mouth and Dr. Doom.
Mount has plenty of reasons to be doomy and gloomy. He says climate change is conspiring against the fragile balance at work here. In order for the Delta to serve millions of Californians, the salty water of the San Francisco Bay must be kept away from the pumps that bring fresh water to cities and farms. To do that, water managers keep their eyes on the salt in the Delta at all times. They have to strategically release water from reservoirs hundreds of miles away to make sure enough fresh water moves downstream to keep that salt at bay.
The climate change is driving the salt inward. I mean, and we're going to be accommodating that over the next 100, 200 years.
So this right here, this would be brackish.
Yes. Under climate change in the future, where we're sitting now, which is now fresh because of heroic efforts that we're doing in managing water supply, this will be brackish, salty in the future.
Under California's climate change scenarios, Mount says sea level will rise, and there won't be as much fresh water available to push it back out.
We're getting more of our runoff in the winter and less during the summer. And we need those summer inflows to hold the salt back. And we're going to have less capacity to do that in the future because we just won't have the reserves that we were able to hold in our snowpack in the past.
Oh, and there's another problem, perhaps Mount's favorite topic. The 1,100 miles of levees, rock and dirt mounds, that keep the water in its place. Here's how Mount describes them.
Fragile, grubby levees which are in terrible shape.
Mount says there are two types of levees, those that have failed and those that will fail. Here on Sherman Island, wind-driven waves lap up against a rocky levee. During a typical storm, with extreme high tides, there's about a foot between those waves and the top of the levee. That's not much margin for error.
It's a game of inches out here. I mean, you got to figure these levees, during a big storm, waves wash right over the top of these levees. So you're just sort of clinging to the edge here, and with very little margin for error. Regrettably, the sea level is rising, so that's going to go over the tops of the levees much more often in the future.
Mount heads an independent board of scientists advising the state. They're projecting that sea level could rise by a foot by the year 2050 and 3 feet or more by the end of the century. That is, if greenhouse gas emissions continue at their current pace. Add to that increased flows from warm winter storms pushing rivers to capacity, And there will be times when the Delta has more water than it can handle. This dire picture of the future comes as Mount says these grubby old levees are already under increasing pressure. We walk away from the water's edge and go to the land side of the levee. We're actually on an island, yet this island is well below sea level. A century ago, dozens of Delta islands were created in what was once wide-open marsh. Levees were built, marshes drained, and ever since then, the land has been subsiding. Mount says the islands lose about an inch a year.
The ground itself doesn't go down. What happens is the soil itself disappears into the atmosphere. It's through oxidation. See? We're going to go to this tower here, and you can see the effects of subsidence on this tower.
The ruddy cement blocks anchoring a large electrical tower are above ground now.
These footings are now very well exposed. 4 or 5 feet of footing is exposed here. That used to be underground.
And every inch that the sea level rises is multitudes.
Yeah.
Multitudes of increased risk, basically.
Right. And in fact, it's not just simply if the sea level goes up 10%, it's a 10% increase in risk. No, it doesn't work that way. It's an order of magnitude increase in risk if sea level goes up 10%. So the effect of lowering of the island, the interior of the island, is just the same as the effect of raising sea level. Well, now you add on top of that the fact that the sea level is going up, and it's just amplifying the effect of subsidence in these islands.
Nature abhors a vacuum. And Mount says all these Delta islands are essentially vacuums.
Because right now, where we're standing, we're well below sea level. We're maybe as much as 15 feet below sea level right here. And just on the other side of this levee is water that's at or above sea level. The tide's rising right now. And it's trying real hard to get in here. And it's just that crummy little levee which is keeping it from getting in here.
Mount and most Delta experts agree the current situation in the Delta isn't sustainable. Eventually, that fragile balance of salt and fresh water will shift in favor of salt.
It's going to do it one of two ways. It's going to do it gradually, with sea level rise and changes in inflows, or it's going to do it suddenly through a collapse of the levees. And what happens when the levees collapse is because these islands are holes in the ground, they're not islands anymore, they're these giant bowls surrounded by fragile levees, when they break, the water rushes into these islands so fast, it literally pulls the salt water out of San Francisco Bay into the Delta, and it makes the Delta salty.
He calls it the Big Gulp.
Just the noise of the water rushing into this island. Imagine that the water is 15 to 20 feet higher than the interior of the island, and it's the sound of like a waterfall as this rushes in and scours this hole in the ground as the water rushes in and hurling pieces of soil way out onto the island. I mean, the power of these levee breaks is immense. It's unimaginable, and there's nothing you can do about it.
And that's why they call him Dr. Doom. For the California Report, I'm Tamara Keith on Sherman Island in the Delta.
We didn't want to leave you hanging on that note of unavoidable doom Jeff Mount describes in Tamara's story, so we asked a member of the Governor's Delta Vision Task Force to respond. She's Sunny Wright McPeak, and she's with us right now. So in the story we just heard, Jeff Mount says that climate change will mean serious risks for California's water supply. What do you think of his assessment?
I think that Dr. Mount's warnings are very sobering and should be taken seriously. On behalf of the Governor's Blue Ribbon Delta Vision Task Force, however, we think there's a lot that can be done and much that needs to be done immediately. The Blue Ribbon Task Force, appointed by Governor Schwarzenegger, issued a report at the end of November that set forth a package of actions. And it takes a number of steps together, integrated, linked, comprehensive actions that can assure that we retain our precious Delta and also provide exports to the San Joaquin Valley and Southern California.
Here in California, we like to think that we can think or innovate our way out of problems. Is that what you're describing that the Delta Vision Task Force is saying, or are these just things that are very sort of common sense that we know how to do them already and we just have to get going and do them?
Actually, it's just common sense that we've known for a quarter of a century what needs to be done and that, in fact, something had to be done. So let me give you an example. We need to have legal recognition and protection of the estuary, which is one of the most precious environmental resources in California. The Delta Estuary is the largest estuary on the west coast of either North America or South America. We also have a state that needs water, and our delta will never be protected if we can't assure that California's water needs are met throughout the rest of the state. So our task force said, start with that common sense reality that we have two co-equal goals, that we must protect our environment, and that includes the Delta, and we also have to recognize the economic reality of the state needing water. So that's where we began. And then we said we have to do everything possible on preserving our water resource and using it more efficiently. But we also need facilities. We absolutely have to be able to capture water when it is truly surplus to the environment. We've got heavy snows and heavy runoff where we today don't have any place to put that water. We need it captured in off-stream storage. The governor and the Department of Water Resources has identified three very viable sites that are being located today or discussed today. One is in Colusa County. It's actually called Sites. The second is in Contra Costa County, expanding Los Vaqueros Reservoir. And the third is on the upper San Joaquin called Temperance Flat. All of those facilities would have the positive effect of allowing us to capture water when it's high rain and a lot of snowpack, keep floodwaters from washing out our delta levees or flooding other communities, and being able to hold water that can be released for the environment when we need it in those third, fourth, fifth years of long extended droughts.
You make it seem very rational, very much common sense, and very doable.
It is entirely doable. We've had the answers for so long, and although there's a lot of political strife, I dare say that there is this majority of Californians, first and foremost, who get the very common sense approach of the package of solutions, and a growing number of politicians who are recognizing that the people have gotten it long before they have.
Now we just have to figure out how to pay for it.
It is all going to be expensive, but it'll be far more economical to make the investment today than to wait for the disaster to hit us.
Sunny Wright McPeak, she's a member of the Delta Vision Blue Ribbon Task Force. Thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
To hear other stories in our climate change series and to learn more about global warming's impact on our water, go to californiareport.org. Well, you wouldn't know it from this week's weather, but the sun is a growing source of energy in California. In fact, some of the wines you're drinking these days may well have been produced with solar power. Winemakers and grape growers, like other farmers in California, worry that global warming could put them out of business. So many wineries are now installing solar electric systems, trying to do their part by reducing CO2 emissions and shrinking their carbon footprints. Cy Musiker has more.
It's a foggy morning, gray and damp, classic weather for late fall in Napa Valley. The harvest is done, the new wine's beginning a long winter nap in tanks and barrels. But it's busy at Far Niente Winery in Oakville.
We have finished the harvest of grapes, but we're setting up here to start harvesting the sun.
Larry McGuire is president of Far Niente. He's standing next to an irrigation pond covered with giant silver lily pads, solar panels floating on plastic pontoons. McGuire calls the system photovoltaics.
It's going to help us generate more electricity as it keeps the panels cooler during the hot part of the day, which makes the panels more efficient.
McGuire credits his college-age son for launching Far Niente's venture into solar power. McGuire had purchased a new BMW 2 years ago when his son arrived home for the Christmas holiday.
And he was home for 2 days and hadn't smiled or anything about the car. I was expecting him to ask for the keys. And I said, "What's up? Don't you like the car?" And he said, "Dad, you're worse than the ignorant. You know better, and you've chosen inaction."
You've chosen a car that burns premium gas and lots of it.
Exactly right. And I've always just assumed that somebody else was going to be the solution for that problem. But he shamed me into it, and I recognized that it was my job to lead.
It's no surprise that California's coastal wineries are concerned about global warming. They've built their reputation for quality on fine wine grapes ripening slowly during warm days but very cool nights. One solar specialist estimates about 28 wineries in Napa and 14 in Sonoma have gone solar. The same goes for Mendocino.
We became carbon neutral here 2-3 months ago.
That's Paul Dolan, a partner at Mendocino Wine Company, maker of Parducci and other labels. The winery just won the Governor's Leadership Award for fighting global climate change. Dolan says he already sees the effects of global warming in his vineyards.
The temperature is going crazy on us, and so it's changing the dynamics of where it's appropriate to have grapes or not have grapes. So we will find some places in California no longer ideal for grape growing here in the very near future.
Back at Far Niente, Larry McGuire stands by as workers shove a new raft of solar panels down a muddy bank and into the pond.
It's great. I wish I had a bottle of champagne to christen it.
Far Niente and its two sister wineries sell their wines for $50 to $100 and more a bottle. So I asked McGuire if it's really so impressive for businesses like his with deep pockets and well-heeled clients to invest in solar power.
No, maybe it's not impressive, but it's a responsibility that perhaps our industry hasn't been taking as seriously as we could or should.
McGuire says the winery will spend $7 million to go solar. The system should pay for itself in about 10 years. And then McGuire hopes he and future owners will be able to say they did their part to fight global warming by making wines that are truly bottled sunshine. For the California Report, I'm Cy Musiker.
And that's our show for today. The California Report is a production of KQED Public Radio. Our director is Susie Rocho. The technical producer is Seal Muller. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Jim Bennett. Our online editor is Gabriel Cohen. A big welcome to our new interns, Ali Tabatabai and June Stinson. The producer is Victoria Malleon. Ingrid Becker is the senior producer. Kat Snow edited and produced our climate change series. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation for coverage of immigration issues throughout California, and the California Healthcare Foundation and Cal Hospital Compare, a new website rating hospital quality in California at calhospitalcompare.org.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.